What is the meaning of life?
Forty-two.
Very good. Craig computer? Yes, okay, yes. Well, that is the computer sound, so 42, that's right. I like that, very good. But if you're not a computer, you can't compute numbers. What is the meaning of life? If you cannot quantify it like that. I used to listen to some atheists on TV, and they go on about, life has no meaning, just get on with it, you know. Just get on with it. I used to think they really don't know what they're talking about. Because we as Christians believe that life has a meaning. That is, until I spent some time with Solomon, and I realized that he actually said the same thing as the aforementioned atheists. And Solomon claims that everything in this life is vapor, breath. When you see steam in the shower, or when you boil some pasta, and you see the steam just quickly disappearing. Everything in life is just like steam. That's literally translated. Breath, steam. But in the context of the entire book of Ecclesiastes, he's not talking only about the quantity, 42, or the numbers and shortness of life. He's talking about the quality of life also, everything we do in this life. And that is why most of the translators literally translate the vapor or breath as meaningless or pointless or senseless when they discuss the meaning of life. But there is a difference between Solomon and the atheists I was talking about in this. While the atheists believe that life has always been as it is now, and it will always remain so, Solomon doesn't believe that. Solomon believes that when life was first created, everything was good and was meaningful. And that after the final judgment, which he talks about, everything will become meaningful once again. So that is the difference. So while we live in this in-between period, neither here nor there, while we're stuck in the middle of the dark tunnel, the period of meaninglessness, what is Solomon's advice to us? Well, I did look into it. To be honest, I was very, very surprised at his answer. It's not what I expected to find at all. And I looked at it from a different perspective, and I was a bit unsurprised in the end. So let me just share it with you. While this present life has no meaning, there are still some constructive things we can do, Solomon says. And we find these things repeated throughout the book. So many times that it's unmistakably clear. Surprising, but clear. So we start in chapter 2, verse 24. Ecclesiastes 2:24. It says, nothing is better for a man that he should eat and drink, and that his soul should enjoy good in his labor. This also I saw was from the hand of God. So to enjoy the food that we eat and drink, and the work of our hands, this came from the hand of God. Then you move into the next chapter, chapter 3, verses 12 to 14. Solomon says, I know that nothing is better for them than to rejoice and to do good in their lives, and also that every man should eat and drink and enjoy the good of all his labor. It is the gift of God. I know that whatever God does, it shall be forever. Nothing can be added to it. Nothing can be taken from it. God does it that man should fear before him. So again, to eat and to drink and enjoy the good of our labor, this is the gift of God. nothing can be added to it, nothing can be taken from it. Then you come into chapter 5, verse 18. Here is what I have said. It is good and fitting for one to eat and drink and to enjoy the good of all his labor in which he toils under the sun all the days of his life which God gives him, for it is his portion or heritage. So this is the third time Solomon repeats it as he reflects upon life. It is good to eat and to drink and enjoy the fruit of our labor. He says this is our part, this is our share, this comes from God, this is the gift from God. And then chapter 8, verse 15. So I commanded enjoyment, because a man has nothing better under the sun than to eat, drink, and be merry. For this will remain with him in his labor all the days of his life, which God gives him under the sun. So for the fourth time, Solomon repeats the same thing. Let us eat and drink and be merry. We'll just throw something in here because Apostle Paul says a similar thing, but in a slightly different context. Apostle Paul says, if there is no resurrection from the dead, then let us eat and drink and be merry, for tomorrow we die. So he puts a slightly different spin on it. But when he said this, he was not talking to the Jews, as something in the line that Richard said this morning. He was not talking to the Jews who all believed and lived the godly lives. He was speaking to the Corinthians, or the proper pagans, really, when you read the epistles, taking part in Rome's gluttonous customs, hardcore idolatry. And the prophet Isaiah said the same thing. Isaiah 22:13 says, let us eat and drink, for tomorrow we shall die. So that's where Paul gets it from Isaiah, but Isaiah gets it from Solomon. Solomon is the root of this saying. But again, Isaiah spoke to the people of God who at this point were very removed from God. They become idolaters, practicing all kinds of strange customs from the nations around them. So, this is the context. Paul and Isaiah, they're saying this, let us eat and drink and be merry, for tomorrow we die. They're saying this to idolaters. But Solomon is saying this to the people of God at the time, and they're still the people of God. They're still worshiping God. So Solomon's saying is the original one, spoken in a positive context. And then Isaiah and Paul take it and use it in a negative context, in the opposite context. And they have different audience, and it changes everything. Then we move to chapter 9, and this is the fifth time, the final time. This is the concluding statement, chapter 9, verses 7 to 9. It says exactly the same thing for the fifth time, just expands it a little bit more. Ecclesiastes 9, 7 to 9. Go, eat your bread with joy, and drink your wine with a merry heart, for God has already accepted your works. Let your garments always be white, and let your head lack no oil. Live joyfully with the wife whom you love all the days of your vain life, which he has given you under the sun, all your days of vanity, for that is your portion in life and in the labor which you perform under the sun. So, five times Solomon repeats the same advice. Though this life is vain and meaningless, there is something that is apportioned to us by God in this life. He makes it very clear, it comes from God. Eat, drink, and be merry, and joyful. Now he gives us a few more details here. He says, live joyfully with the wife whom you love all the days of your vain life, for that is your portion in life. This is all from God. So, reflecting upon his statement that clearly repeated so many times that you really have to see it as a strong statement, I was rather surprised. I assumed maybe the meaning of life would be something like prayer and fasting, you know, something like that. Down those lines maybe, but not really. I found his answer very surprising, not what I expected. But no, he says, eating, drinking, and enjoying time with your spouse, your family, that is your share, that is your lot. This is a portion in this life, and it comes from God. And he has another detail here in his concluding statement. Let your garments always be white, and let your head lack no oil. What does he mean by that? This is another addition to his main saying about a portion of life. He's talking about keeping things tidy and orderly rather than in chaos. Do you remember what was the first thing Jesus did when he came back from the dead and he was resurrected? Did he fly up to heaven to see his Father? What was the first thing that he did? It's a small detail. It may not be important, but old. Yeah, there was a towel that was covering his face, and before he did anything, rushing out, joyfully happy, he folded the towel nicely and put it on his grave. So you would think the first thing he would be just fly straight up to heaven to see his Father, but no. He neatly folded the towel that was covering his head. Then he may have fixed his hair, maybe, I don't know. Just because you are resurrected, it doesn't mean that your hair doesn't move anymore, you still need to fix it. And when we go back to the very beginning, the creation and God's original plan for humans, when life still had a purpose that was meaningful, the truth is that the part which God apportioned to humans, to Adam and Eve, was not that much different to what Solomon tells us about this present life. Solomon says, eat and drink and be merry, enjoy it. In the beginning, God planted many, many beautiful trees in the Garden of Eden with all kinds of beautiful and juicy fruits you could eat or squeeze and drink and enjoy. Solomon says, enjoy the time with the wife you love, the spouse, although obviously God says in the beginning it is not good to be alone, anticipating what may be happening. And some of us are alone, some are alone even though they're not alone. But going back to the beginning, when life was perfect, Solomon says, enjoy the time with the wife you love. And God told Adam and Eve, be fruitful and multiply. Enjoy each other's company and have children. Solomon says, let your garments be white and your head be covered with oil. This is probably just a coincidence, but Adam and Eve were actually dressed in white garments of light. And something we read this morning, when Elijah and Moses appeared on the Mount of Transfiguration, they were dressed in garments of light. And then Jesus became of the same appearance, suggesting to us what we will look like when God's kingdom comes, and what Adam and Eve used to look like before sin. So, what Solomon is saying is, keep things clean and tidy on you and around you. You know, your hair, your clothes, everything around you. It seems, you know, trivial. But in the beginning, God gave just one job to Adam and Eve, and that job was gardening. Keep the garden tidy. Just because the world is perfect, you know, it doesn't mean that the garden didn't need looking after, because things grow full of life. So even after the resurrection, we will need to keep tidying the garden. Maybe keep fixing our hair, But it won't be labor anymore, it won't be hard. It will be very different. So what Solomon is describing to us in terms of what our portion in this life is, it's really not that much different. In fact, not different at all to the life that God has apportioned to Adam and Eve in the beginning, in the world without sin and suffering. He told them just a few things. Be fruitful and multiply. And look after the Garden of Eden. Solomon is saying exactly the same thing, but in this broken context. So Solomon seems to build his teaching on life, starting with the creation. While Solomon is saying that this present life is meaningless, he says, there's still, in this meaningless life, there is still a trace, still some vague remnant of that original, the creation meaning of life. Though it is damaged and it's all messed up, it's still there. Not just like the image of God in us, it's all damaged and messed up, but it's still there. And it will be fully restored after the final judgment and resurrection. Our lives will have a meaning once again. Not yet. But only when we see God face to face and we sit at the same table with Him, and there Christ with His crown folding down His garments and serving us with the new fruit from the Father's kingdom. This is something that we are looking forward to as we enjoy the partial, broken and damaged life experience that God never intended for us. But the promise is that He will restore it to us. And Solomon realized that in this life we cannot have it. Only a shadow of that experience. Mm-hmm. Only a taste of what was and what will be when God sets everything right in the end. Thank you.